Hey, our guests are arriving. A bevy of comely lasses.
One of them is very, very young, but maybe heard from.
You know who that is, don't you, Ellen? So, who that baby is?
I don't know that baby's name.
It's Lulu.
Lulu. She's a girl. I called her a boy before. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Well, no one else looks like a boy.
I look like a boy.
No, you don't, Damara Rose.
So, welcome to all of you. We have to share mics because we're a poor station and we do the best we can. And you're going to have to speak, really get really close to the mic and speak directly into it. And you should probably put headphones on. So
would you like to introduce our guests, Ellen?
Sure. Sarah,
I don't hear anything in the headphones.
Okay.
You just heard from...
There we go. Damara Rose signing in.
Damara, you can use this stool here.
I think I'm okay to stand.
When you feel the urge to sit and you have to share the mic with...
Okay, ready to rock.
Right. And we're here with Sarah Dibben, who's Damara's partner in...
Crime.
I let you say that, not me.
And Jennifer is also my partner in crime.
You want to introduce Jennifer and tell us something about her?
Yeah, Jennifer Schwartz-Berkey was a professor at Bard briefly, and I studied with her there. She now has her own company, and I'll let Jennifer tell you all about that. So here she is, Jennifer Schwartz-Berkey.
Ooh.
Hello, I'm Jennifer. I guess I'll tell you a little bit about the phone call I got last year.
That's a good way to start. How you got involved with Hudson Praxis, and what is the goal of Hudson Praxis?
Well, Damara was one of my students, and one day she just called me out of the blue to say that they were working on this exciting project looking at a historic building on the waterfront. It's the Dunn Building. And she knew that this is an area where I've done a lot of work. She took a course of mine about adaptation on the Kingston waterfront, looking at issues related to flooding and urban revitalization. So she knew that I had some background in this. And the questions that came up were, how do we obtain this building? How do we approach the Common Council to be considered as a tenant there? How do we develop the program? How can we be eligible for grants? So I worked with her and Sarah and a group of stakeholders to think about how do you even conceive of this entire process, which can take many years.
Can we take just a little step back? And Sarah, let me ask, how did the idea to have an aquarium, which is what everyone thinks of it as, on the waterfront?
Going to Common Council meetings, you find out lots of little workings of the city, and in the budget of the city of Hudson, they wanted to sell off property, which is not necessarily the best idea for a long-term goal of a city. And this area has many wonderful attributes, but could use some rounding out in some areas. And one of the things that I love to go visit is museums, and I very much love aquariums, and I thought, just what the heck, what if it were an aquarium? So I threw the idea out at a meeting, and it was just kind of liked. And so it was a bit of a whim. At a Common Council meeting. But Damara ran with it and really, you know, said, what would it take to make this happen? And that's where the phone call to Jennifer came into place.
And I guess Lulu agrees.
Very much.
And we're talking about the Dunn's Warehouse building on the waterfront here in Hudson. And there's been a lot of discussion about it lately because of the...
It came very close to being sold.
I guess it did, it was at one point.
It was written into the key was that it was written into the budget last year.
A practice that I think is a really bad one.
Horrible idea.
What if you don't
sell it?
Sell the building, then you suddenly have a deficit of whatever you put you put in.
As far as I understand, there are a few proposals on the table still.
Still.
Yeah. It's still in discussion with those powers that be, but there's nothing imminent and there are no deals set to go through at this time, as far as I understand.
Well, that raises an interesting question that I thought about when I heard you guys were going to be on, and that is how can you sort of block those deals? How far along do you think you're going to have to be before they'll stop and say you're in the running? You think it's just a question of money?
I think it's a question of money. I think it's also a question of longevity. I think the city wants to see a plan that they know can work and that they also know that they're going to make a little bit of tax money off of. It doesn't have to, you know, raise any eyebrows, but they need to make sure that they're covering their if you know what I mean.
No. Can you explain that?
Something that just follows behind the city.
All right.
Also, they do happen to have a Department of State grant at the moment that was awarded many years ago for looking at the feasibility of different uses and doing a market study in order to decide
for the Dunn building?
For the Dunn building and potentially the adjacent property. And the general consensus with the Department of State is that these types of buildings, and this is true in waterfront communities up and down, you know, the Hudson throughout the state, as well as anywhere, if you look at the types of uses that are now becoming popular or have become popular in adaptive reuse of waterfronts, mm-hmm. is to think about uses that will serve the public, that will create better access to water, that will potentially have a mixed use so that they can generate more of a 24/7 and week-long activity. So the goal is really to think about not just who's going to make money on this building, mm-hmm. but how will this building best serve the public and be utilized for a long time to come.
You know, it goes way, way back, the discussion about that building. First of all, it was a gasification works. That's why it was built, apparently. And those gasification works, as I understand it, are up and down the Hudson, all over the place. And it means a lot of remediation has to take place. And they did do remediation on the building, but apparently the feasibility study at this point, I think, has to do is determine whether more remediation is needed and what the building can actually be used for.
Ellen, you're 100% correct, and that's a bridge that's on the horizon, and that's one that we're going to cross when we get there. We can't get there unless we raise 10 grand to do the feasibility study, and we have a fundraiser up online now. There are 37 days left, and it's going quite smoothly.
How far along are you?
Somewhere around 2 or 3, if you count mm-hmm. promised funds that are not already up on the website.
You're talking about the Indiegogo campaign, right?
Yeah.
And how do people, it's under Hudson Praxis?
You can search on Indiegogo using Hudson Praxis or using Dunn Warehouse, Hudson, New York. And it's also linked on Facebook through Hudson Praxis.
So who would be doing this feasibility study?
Jennifer Schwartz-Burkey, who's sitting right here.
She has done many,
and she's way overqualified. Maybe she wants to speak towards that.
Yes, yeah, Jennifer, tell us more about what you've done.
What is the feasibility study?
Well, to answer Ellen's question about what I've done, I've been working for 30 years as a conservation architect and urban planner. mostly dealing with downtown sites, historic sites, and waterfront sites. And so looking at a feasibility study for this would include a market analysis to look at what are the potential best and highest uses for the facility, what would the visitation be, where's the market, what would it cost to run, and of course, as Ellen mentioned, if there are outstanding brownfield or contamination issues, we would bring in some testing, look at that. But first we have to gather the documents and understand the current conditions, and then we would move forward. I know Damara wants me to say something else. I'm not sure quite what.
I just had a question about brownfielding. And in your opinion, do you think that brownfielding is not the correct use of the word? Sorry. Brownfields. Do you think that the potential of it being a brownfield could make it eligible for more funding?
Absolutely. The Department of State provides funds, although at this point they're currently not available, but there are new mm-hmm. rounds of funding, and hopefully it will be reallocated. It comes from the federal government. And sites that are considered to be brownfields are not only those that are contaminated, but those that have experienced some kind of blight. And the Brownfields Opportunity Areas Program makes funds available for those sites that would be that would create sort of a catalyst for other investment. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a contaminated site. Mm-hmm. It should be a site that supports the revitalization of areas that were previously blighted.
Now, at the Indiegogo site, there are sketches of what the building might look like. Are those just sort of preliminary, kind of a rough idea of what might happen?
I designed my concept based on a few different case studies of similar projects around the world, and also just based on my perception of what is actually going on the waterfront right now, mm-hmm. and an observation of what the community could possibly use. And I've lived here for most of my life, so it's based on my life experience. I don't think that my project or my concept is necessarily the most relevant or useful use of the space, but I wanted to put it out there as an inspiration for the community to come up with their own ideas and give us feedback as we form a board and just think about bylaws and the other things that come along with starting a nonprofit. Yes, Jennifer.
Yeah, well, actually, what I'd like to say, just responding to what Damara said, she's being very modest, because
is her way.
I live in Kingston, where we've seen enormous changes take place in the last 10 years, and it has been due specifically to people who I like to call agents of change, like Damara, people who are in the community, who understand what people are interested in, who have a lot of energy, who are generally outside of government, but who understand how to work in government and really raise awareness and get something going. That's the way everything has changed in our community in the last 10 years. So I think Damara deserves a great deal of kudos for that.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. But I just also wanted to add that Herbert Dreisaitl's work was a massive inspiration. And also there's a catch and release native species ecosystem center in Ulysses. I don't know how to pronounce the cities, but it's in Canada. Yes.
So Ellen, did you want to ask about the particular uses?
First of all, Hudson Praxis. What does Praxis mean?
Praxis is a word that I think originated with, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. But I'm not positive. I'm pretty sure it was Aristotle. I'd have to ask David Marston because he came up with that word. Hudson Praxis. So praxis means to practice. So Hudson to practice, aquarium.
It's what you do after
art,
theory.
And natural science. So, yeah.
Ellen,
Excuse me?
It's the post-theoretical. What you do after you have a theory, you actually practice.
Ah, very good.
You put it into work.
I knew
work.
You would
you put
know.
It into, yeah.
So
I just want our listeners to know.
So the title is a call to the community to get involved, to explore nature and art and science and why those things go together, how they inspire each mm-hmm. other, and how they can inspire further learning.
So this feasibility study, can you tell us more about that? In other words, so you'll find out more about what is available in terms of funds for potential remediation. What other kinds of things?
I think the main thing is to understand whether this particular use would be the right use for the site. And
how do you go about that? I know I'm sorry, you mentioned that already. I was just curious, how do you determine that?
So one of the things that we look at is the potential visitation. So, for example, many cultural institutions in this area are receiving about 25,000 visitors a year. And so, for example, the Olana and Thomas mm-hmm. Cole House being two good mm-hmm. prime examples of that. Understanding that the train plays a role in bringing people up from the city, that there's a weekender population with children that might want to visit. When we're looking at a feasibility study, a big part of it is the market analysis. And the market analysis would say, well, is there a demand for a space that is interested in nature, the outdoors, educating children, being on the waterfront? So we do a series of different types of surveys, maybe user groups, maybe through SurveyMonkey, and we'd talk to tourism people in the area and think about whether something like this would be a reasonable or even exciting idea to people.
I think one of the ideas behind the grant that you referred to earlier was to determine whether a restaurant, for example, a food facility could be placed there. Because of the former uses of the building, it might have to be a lot of work done. But I'm interested in the fact that Damara says Hudson Praxis Aquarium Art and Natural Science Center. I mean, it's really a much broader sort of educational institution than some museums are, anyway.
Well, like I said, I based the concept on what I feel the community needs, and I see a giant gap in the support system for our school. I've also spoken with a science teacher there and a science professor at Bard and also at Simon's Rock. And I'd like to see some leadership going on to a larger extent. I think that the Kite's Nest is doing a great job sort of championing that at the beginning stages. But our city really needs to take a giant step up in terms of support for our children. Another organization developing into a nonprofit this year is the Sloop Club, and they're doing an excellent job as well, and they're networking with Kite's Nest, which I'm sure many of the listeners on this station know. But I think that awareness is still at the elementary level, and follow through in terms of support for our public school is pretty weak.
Jennifer, is part of your feasibility study figuring out how to raise funds for this to actually happen?
Absolutely. So part of it would be to understand what the costs would be, mm-hmm. which you can generally do on a square foot basis. However, there are a number of factors, such as the restaurant, which Ellen brought up. And that question, just to go back to that, it wouldn't be necessary to have a full service restaurant, but it's very important for museums and facilities like this, especially if they do have a connection to an outdoor space where, for example, there might be a water-dependent use. This mm-hmm. is something that's in the comprehensive plan, and the LWRP is the idea of creating greater access to the waterfront. A restaurant would do quite well, even if it is something that is more of a concession or kiosk space, at least to start.
Right.
But many visitors to museums and cultural facilities expect to have some kind of refreshment when they're at their visit, and it increases the length of their stay.
Well, even now when there are events down there and there are many festivals and, you know, parades here in Hudson, people don't stay very long sometimes because they have to go elsewhere to find food because they're kind of expect food vendors or food of some sort to be available once they're down there. It's part of the mix for sure. And I think in the past there's been, this goes way back to the vision plan when a restaurant and or a hotel are always brought up as uses for that particular space on the waterfront. I just wanted to stop and say, Sarah, jump in here whenever you can get a word in.
So okay. Jennifer.
Actually, to get back to Tom's question about funding, the Regional Economic Development Councils throughout New York State are making funding available competitively to communities that are looking to do revitalization like this, either historic preservation funds, acquisition funds, and it all comes down at the same time of year, which is July. And so we're going to be looking at making that application this year. However, we need to work through some of the questions of whether or not this organization would be potentially the right tenant and whether the Common Council would be willing to sponsor an application of that sort. So the funding can be raised. The question really is, first, how do you determine the use and gather all the support that you need to win such a grant?
I wanted to speak towards also the...
This is Sarah speaking.
The food and possible use of building comes in with the feasibility study, but we live in a community that has quite a variety to offer in the food element within easy walking distance. So an idea like this is to add to the community, not and to try and create a balance without taking away from businesses that already exist. We in Hudson have this wonderful train station that has 20 stops a day. That's more than any other Amtrak stop. And all those people can easily walk up our main street.
Right. This has been a problem at Dia Beacon. Is that people just go to Dia Beacon and just go right back because it's so far down on the hill from the city. They just go to Dia Beacon and get back on the train and leave.
Yeah, we should have that problem.
So this project, developing the Dunn and the waterfront in a way that supports our local community, also can be something that creates a draw for our community, which does also help with revenue and tax dollars.
Sorry, I was just having a thought. The mayor put out his ideas to have a hotel down on the waterfront. What was that, about 2 months ago or something? And an idea that goes way back, which is a cool one. And I think that it would be awesome to have sort of a theme going on down there if we do end up putting a hotel down there. And I think that a hotel next to a museum or aquarium is much more appealing than a hotel next to something else, depending on what that something else is. So,
I just wanted to throw out yet another idea, and that is when the quadricentennial was celebrated in 2009, and the replica of Henry Hudson's ship, Half Moon, came to Hudson. Chip Reynolds, who is the captain and the head of that organization, looked at the Dunn warehouse and said, that should be a museum. And he was thinking, of course, of himself and bringing the Half Moon to birth, actually, in Hudson. And he's really an educator more than he is a captain of a ship. And he has all kinds of ideas about what this museum would be. And he sometimes brings the ship across the river to Peckham Industries, where they work on the ship. And so there could even be a connection somehow between Athens and Hudson.
As it turns out, Ellen, this is Jennifer, Troy, I believe, is going to be the home port for the if I'm not mistaken, for the Half Moon. At least that's something that they've determined at this point. But I think this idea is wonderful. And in fact, there are ample opportunities for this sort of thing to happen, the sort of home port idea. In Kingston, we now have the home port for the Clearwater.
Ah.
And that building represents an interesting opportunity just for Kingston in terms of increasing visitation. We expect at least 10,000 more visitors a year to the Maritime Museum and that site as a result of getting the Clearwater there. So that's an important thought. Also, just getting back to what Tom said, I think that the problem that Kingston and that Beacon experience with visitors walking is not going to be as much as pronounced here because Warren Street is so much closer to the waterfront. Right. And there are great ways of making those connections here.
Right. And we could bring back our trolleys.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's remind listeners, Ellen, that they can go to Indiegogo, look up either Dunn Warehouse Hudson or Hudson Praxis, that's Praxis, and make a donation to get this feasibility study done. The next stage in a potential museum here in Hudson, another museum. We already have the wonderful Firefighters Museum.
That's right. Is there anything else that we need to tell our listeners before we depart?
Yeah, I have a record release on April 28th at Helsinki.
Is this the Double D's or is this Foamique? It's the Foamique.
We have our last warm-up show for our record release on the 12th, which is on the 7th, which is Monday. And then Deborah and I are playing with the Double D's, being ourselves, on April 12th, which is a Saturday at 9 p.m. sharp with the minivans. They'll be playing after us.
This is at Helsinki.
Yeah.
You're seeing the other side of Demara
Ellen,
Rose.
What have I always told you? Helsinki, things begin sharp. No other venue in this town, do they? But at Helsinki, they do.
I just also want to say, as an outsider, you should trust these, and also as a middle-aged person, you should trust these young people. They're the future of this town.
I believe the children are the future. Sorry. I just got carried away.
I think you've started the ball rolling.
Hey, Ellen, is this, by the way, I think we made a little history here. I think we had the first breastfeeding on the air. But maybe not. Maybe someone's
Mom.
Beaten us to that. I don't know. This is kind of a wild station. You never know what goes on here. Anyway, thank you all.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. And come back to let us know.
Oh,
we absolutely will.
We've been talking to Jennifer Schwartz-Berkey, who will be doing the strategic plan if and when it gets funded. When it gets funded. Let's be optimistic about
That's right.
Damara Rose Stoffo.
Oh, wait. You know what? I forgot to give Basilica a shout out when we were talking about people doing things on the waterfront.
Don't worry.
Shout out, Basilica.
Yeah, we give them plenty of shout outs. Don't worry. they have been shout outed too much. And Sarah Dibden, who you may know from Swallow.
Thank you to all the people who have already donated at Indiegogo. We tremendously appreciate the support.
Thank you so much for coming. And we'll see you again soon, I hope.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM on your dial. Also, or should I say WGXC.org. And we're going to listen to the news. It's time for the headlines with our own Jessica Puglisi.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is Jess Puglisi with the WGXC Hands-On Radio News and Weather Report for Thursday, the 3rd day of April 2014. Casey Sealer.